So last week of talking to kids about, this has been probably one of my favorite classes we've done as young families to teach. I hope you've gotten something out of it. I'm seriously thinking about putting it together in like workbook or book form and trying to get it out there into the wild. So feedback is interesting to me. If you have comments that, hey, before you publish that, don't say that stupid thing you said, would be really helpful to me because I'm giving it some serious thought. I actually have another lesson I'd like to do. This is one of the, usually at the end of the quarter, I'm like, boy, I hope I have enough material to finish. This time I've got a whole other lesson I'd love to do, but out of time. So,
I'll write forwards for your book. And
yes, you can all write forwards. My child is an atheist now, thanks to Ben Williams. Basic guidelines, just one last review. Remember, the plan is to kind of get a basic idea of the topic for yourself, do some thinking about it. Don't assume you're right. I mean, don't assume, oh, I've got that one figured out. I'll just explain to the kids. Do some thought. Give some thought and study to it. And you're going to translate that into the mystical language of childese, where you're going to figure out what words, concepts, more than words, make sense to the age group you're trying to communicate to. If possible, you're going to find some kind of metaphor. That's my big rule of communication. This is like that is how everything important in life is communicated. This is like that. I just wrote an article on a friend's blog, actually, on how Christians communicate using metaphor. I just think it's an important concept to think about. This is like that is one of the most important things you do in communication, whether it's preaching or talking to kids or whatever. The Bible uses lots of metaphors, so if you find one in the Bible, use that, right? You may have to tailor it a little bit to kids' level, but that's going to be the way to go. You're going to tolerate misunderstandings when your kids say, oh, so it's like, you're going to say, well, kind of, and roll with it because we don't want to discourage them. We're just going to keep nudging them in the right direction. The idea is to put the target in the right direction, and then they'll zero in as time goes by. But get them pointed in the right direction is the key. And then we're going to encourage questions and imagination. We want them to do some thinking. Okay. Today, we're going to talk about what I'm calling the spiritual realm. And what I mean by that is probably one of the fundamental differences between the way Christians view the world and kind of your typical secular materialist thinking is that we believe there's more of the world than what you can see right in front of you. Like just that basic statement is itself fairly controversial in a world that's very much in love with science and scientism. Well, I know things by science, and that's provable, and all that other stuff is hokum. All things that are invisible tend to get thrown into the same category. You know? So you Christians, basically, and your horoscopes and all that, right? Like, it's all like the same thing to some people, that you just believe in that weird stuff that nobody can prove. Well, we would say it is invisible, some of the things we're talking about, but doesn't mean it's in the same category as horoscopes and other things that are just completely unfalsifiable and meaningless in that sense. See the difference? So talking to kids about what do we mean when we say that Christians believe in stuff we can't see is kind of today's topic, which I'm putting under the big banner heading of the spiritual realm. So six terms I want to talk about today. Faith. What is faith? We're going to talk about what that means and how we might explain it to kids. Science. Toughest question my son, up to now, has asked me is a science and the Bible question. Like, I was prepping myself for all the other things we've talked about. And even like, hey, Dad, tell me about girls. You know, I was expecting that question eventually. But when I got this question, okay, I'm a guy with a degree in astrophysics, and I was unprepared for this question. Hey, my science textbook at school says this, but the Bible says this. Should I believe the Bible or science? I was totally unprepared for that wording of the question. Right? Because there's something deeply mistaken about that question, actually. You're never asked by God to pick between science and scripture. It's not the way it works. But in his head, up to this point, he had it figured out. He thought, I've got to pick. I can either argue with my teacher in Bible class or argue with my teacher in school, but one of them I apparently disagree with. And I thought, wow, how am I supposed to talk about that? And I was not ready for that question, even though I've done nothing but write about apologetics my entire life. That phrasing of the question, I was unprepared. So we're talking about science, we're talking about spirits, what do you mean when we say we believe in things that are spiritual or spirit in nature? And then just to round out the class with a big mess, angels, demons, and Satan. because those would be examples of things that Christians believe in that are definitely on the fringe of the scientific world, to say the least, right? Not things in your biology textbook. Okay, define faith for me. Don't use the word faith. Yeah. Well, like having faith. What does faith mean in childese?
Believing in what you can't see.
Believing in something you can't see. And what does believe mean? Don't say have faith.
But you know it exists.
Knowing? Okay. So yeah, I do think the right way to talk about faith is in the category of knowledge. It's a kind of knowing. It's a kind of certainty. A good word that we use with kids a lot is the word trust. Faith is trust in what someone has told you. Someone has said the following things are true. There is a God. Whether it's the Bible or your parents or your preacher or whatever, somebody told you that at some point. And you are trusting that statement to be true. The technical term for that in epistemology is your belief. You have warranted testimony. Right? Somebody said something, and you're saying, I think I am reasonable for believing that testimony. You say there is a God, I believe that. And it's based on trust. Maybe John says he saw the risen Jesus. And I say, okay, I believe John is trustworthy. I believe him. Jesus is risen from the dead. So it's about trust. What's the tricky thing about trust? Of course, we teach kids not to trust everything. Hey, here's some candy. Come get in my van. We tell kids, don't trust that person, stranger danger. So we'll have to talk about how to distinguish when do you trust and how do you trust. But that is a pretty good word for it. I use it in the pulpit a lot for adults. Faith is trust. Do I believe God's going to come through on what he said? That's faith, trust. So what is science? Engineer? Go ahead, what's science?
Study of the world.
Study of the world, okay.
And how things work.
And how things work. What kind of, if faith is trusting someone's word, how are we knowing things by science? Because that's another kind of knowing. Huh? Okay, so
evidence.
Don't say proof and don't say evidence, okay? I wag my finger. Because that makes it sound like, now if you got faith, you got no proof and evidence for that. You're just, you know.
Science is just that.
Okay.
Basically
yeah.
To prove.
So I want to say knowing by the senses. Science is, and that's what you mean by proof, okay, just to give you a little out there. What you meant when you said proof was things I can know firsthand. But the problem is when we say the only kind of proof that is proof is firsthand knowledge, then we've ruled out a whole lot of proof. Right? Your child has no proof that you're their parent. That's not mean that it's not demonstrable. I mean, you could do a DNA test, but they've never done one. It's scientifically knowable, but they don't know it through science. They take for granted that you're probably not lying to them. Hi, I'm your dad. Okay. When you go to a courtroom, they provide proof to the jury. But the jury has no firsthand evidence. If they had firsthand evidence, they're a witness, not a juror. The juror, by definition, are people who didn't see it happen. But you offer proof, and they accept it as evidence. You saw it firsthand. They accept it based on your testimony. See the difference there in how we know things? So I'm being a little persnickety about it. Because it kind of matters that I think a lot of times we talk about, well, science is how you really know things, and faith is, well, I hope it's true. Okay, and that's just not a legitimate way of thinking about it. That, in fact, there are two different ways of knowing things, and we use them both all the time without question. Sometimes you want to know it for yourself, like by touching it, and sometimes you take somebody's word for it. I'm going to go a step further. Most of the things you know are by the first category. Folks, you have never done an experiment to detect an electron. You've never even met anybody who's discovered an electron. You take for granted that some guy who's in your textbook did an experiment and found something he thought was an electron. And your whole world is built around it. You trust somebody else's testimony about their science. They saw it. You trust that they saw it. Most of the things we know are things we trust other people said. I've never been to Europe. I assume it's there. But it's entirely based on people telling me it's there. I have no firsthand knowledge of it. So most of the things you know are based on testimony. That's not bad knowledge. If you only trusted things you know firsthand, you would be really stupid. And I mean that like in the nicest way possible. Like the amount of information, well, I don't know that firsthand. I've never really solved for gravity, so how do I know? Right? I mean, you rule out a lot of things. So spirits are the kind of things that you can't know by science. Science, by definition, is stuff you get to firsthand by your senses. Things that are spiritual, whether it is God who is a spirit, or spirit beings, or humans are spirits, or whatever you want to say that pertains to things that are spiritual, are by definition outside the realm of science. Microscopes can't get to it. Doesn't mean it's not real. It's just not the kind of thing you can have firsthand sensing, put a hand on it testimony. If you put a hand on it, it wasn't a spirit. See? So it's a different kind of category. And then from there, we can distinguish things a little further. God is, you know, the grandest and greatest of all beings who are spirit in nature. If you see a spirit in the Bible and it's serving God, we're going to probably call it an angel. If you see a spirit in the universe and it's angry with God, we're going to say, well, it sounds like a demon to me, right? That's the two broad categories. Which side of the God argument are you on, angel or demon? Is kind of the way we think about those categories. And then Satan is what the Bible calls a particular being who is spirit in nature, who is the enemy of God and of all human beings. He is out to get us. There is a spirit who is not on your side. Okay. So that's kind of my quirky description of how to talk about... Did I put spiritual ream up there? Outstanding. And no one corrected me. I appreciate that. Spiritual realm. That's going to go in the book. That'll be a chapter heading. Spiritual reams.
We just all have faith that that's how you spell realm.
You're right. That's exactly right. Outstanding. Okay. So let's run through it a little bit. Biblical metaphors. Hebrews chapter 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 7. We walk by faith, not by sight. See the two categories there that it's describing? There are things that you can see, and I'm going to put into that category anything sense. I mean, just because your eyes are closed. Calvin this morning closed his eyes and said, you can't see me. Okay, it's not quite the way it works. Okay, there are more senses beyond your personal sight, it turns out. But there's the things you can know firsthand through senses. And then there's this other category, the Bible says faith. And the Bible says that most of your decisions in life are not based on things you know firsthand. It's based on trust. You're going to have to believe something because you can't know it all firsthand. It's not possible. You would have had to make all the possible mistakes first in order to know it firsthand. And then it would be too late to worry about what choices you want to make because you've already made all the bad ones. Another way to say it is that Hebrews 11:1, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. And these words, actually, in the Greek text are even more emphatic. They're like concrete building words. They're foundation instruction words. They're construction words. It is the bedrock upon which you are convicted. Right? That there is something there, you don't necessarily see it. Skyscrapers, ever seen a skyscraper under construction? Like early on, it goes down nearly as deep as it does go up. But after that point, you never see the underlayer, the foundation points. You just figure the skyscraper isn't falling over, so it's probably still there. So there's a foundational construction type term. But not seen. And the big point of this lesson that I want to get to you is that not seen is not the same as not knowable or unprovable or untrustworthy. Our culture has kind of swallowed the idea of hook, line, and sinker, that if you don't see it firsthand yourself, you don't really know. And if you think about that for like more than 5 seconds, you'll see how stupid that really is. I can't even prove that there's anybody else in this room that has a mind. Like scientifically, I can't prove that you are a real person and not just a projection of my mind, that you feel pain like I do, and I'm not just like in some kind of weird hokey hologram machine, right? I mean, the number of things, I mean, I know that sounds silly, but the number of things you can't prove by science, but that every day, you don't get up and say, I hope Jeff's real today. You just figure, yeah, I'm pretty sure he seems like me. I'm real. He's real. Okay, we're going to go with that. And you just trust. Hey, are you a real person? Yeah, I am. I trust you. And we go with that every day. Are these people my parents? Yeah, probably. Did I have breakfast this morning? Think about your memories. You can't prove your memories because by definition they're in the past and you can't touch them. Have you ever had a false memory? How do you know that you had breakfast this morning? Right? If you want to get stupid with it, it gets there in a hurry. So my point is that most of the things you know by trust. I trust my own mind. I trust my memory. I trust you when you tell me things. I read a book. It says that there's a place called Europe, and I trust it. Okay? The example Dr. Baird likes to use at OC. Anybody here been to Hawaii? Okay. Pick on you, Jeff, because you look like you picked on. How did you know you were in Hawaii?
Yeah, that's been a document said when I landed this.
So there's a document. I mean, I can print you out a document on a printer right now and say you're in Hawaii. You have to trust me. Well, there's a sign that says, welcome to Hawaii. I can make a sign that says, welcome to Hawaii. Well, they put these flowers around my neck. I can get some flowers at Michael's, right? I mean, the point is, in the military, they don't give you the flowers? Is that right? Point is, like, everything about, even though you were there, you still had to take people's word for it because you weren't out, like, with your GPS measuring and doing mineral samples. Is this really a volcanic island? You just trusted. That's probably where I am. Okay.
Well, and even if you were taking those samples, you're still basing that off of someone else's knowledge about this.
Somebody said this was a volcanic island and I found volcanic rock, but how do I know it is actually? Okay, again, if you want to get ridiculous, and everybody lives in the Matrix now, then you say, okay, maybe I'm going to have to trust somebody eventually. So science is like knowing firsthand. Okay? You pick up a rock, you look at it. Congratulations, you're a scientist. Through touch and sight, you learn about the rock. Science uses the senses to learn about the world around us. It's a very useful way of knowing and learning things, right? So let me just say this to Christian parents. Don't diss science. Science is wonderful. We don't have to pick. You don't have to be anti-science. Again, my degree's in physics. Love science, okay? I have, if you had given me this like 10 years ago, I would think it was a piece of alien technology. But here it is, and it works, and it all based on electrons, which I told you earlier, you can't even prove exist. And yet it makes that work, right? And it's magnificent. Love science. It's simply one way of knowing things. Imagine for a moment there's a drunk and he's staring under a street light. And the police officer comes up and says, hey, what are you looking for? He says, looking for my car keys. Why are you looking here? And the drunk says, it's the only place I can see. Just because it's the only place you can see doesn't mean they're there. Science can see in a certain realm of things. And it can see things there very well. It doesn't mean that everything you might ever want to know is under that particular streetlight. There might be some really important things, like goodness, or beauty, or evil. Einstein famously said, we can speak of the ethical foundations of science, but we can never speak of the scientific foundations of ethics. We know you need to be honest to do science, because if you lie, then we have a problem. But we can't prove from science why you need to tell the truth, because it just doesn't work that way. Faith, instead of touching an object, is like looking at a map. It can be really scary to travel somewhere you've never been. When you use a map, and I have to say map or GPS because your kids have never seen a map, it occurs to me, right? You don't carry an atlas in your back of your car anymore. And Rand McNally, here it is, kids. You don't have that joy of following the little lines and stuff. Okay. So get out your app. Faith is like an app. When you use a map, you are trusting someone who has been there before to tell you where to go. But how does your map app work, by the way? There's a guy who's driving around in a Google car with a camera on top telling you there is a road there, and you're just trusting him. You've never been there, but Google guy with the car has been down that road, and he says, yeah, you can get from here to Jinx that
sometimes
way.
Sometimes he's wrong.
And sometimes he's wrong, demonstrating my point, right? So you're just trusting that guy that's been there before. Faith is the same kind of thing. You're trusting somebody else. And we do it all the time. There is nothing wrong with it. You don't believe everything you see. And you shouldn't believe everything somebody tells you to have faith in. But when you have a reasonable expectation that you're hearing the truth, it's okay to just say, yeah, I believe that. Seems reasonable to me. There's a whole other class I need to teach on how to know the difference. But that point, I think we can get across to kids. Faith is like reading a book, which is convenient because we have this great book that we want our kids to learn. When you read a book or listen to a parent, you learn something you didn't know firsthand. Most of what we know comes to us in this way. Do I have a brain? Never see it. Doctor tells me it's in there. Shut up, Shauna. So, like, come back on the way. No, I need it. But the doctor says it's there. The textbook says it's there. I apparently have a central nervous system. Okay? I never seen it. Faith is trust we have in the words of others. Faith is believing that others have seen things we maybe haven't seen. Does that make sense? Okay. John says, I saw Jesus 3 days after he died, walking around alive. In fact, a whole bunch of us saw the same thing, and we wrote about it. He's asking you to believe something that you personally didn't see, but he saw. And you either trust him or you don't. And we have to think about that. But that's how faith operates.
So basically, he's asking us to have faith in his scientific discovery.
Yeah. In the same way you learn science from a textbook, science you never did, you're believing somebody else that says, I did see it firsthand, but you're going to have to trust me because you're not here. So again, to use my metaphor, imagine you're on the path under a street light. Your senses, which would be like science, only let you see some of the world in the dark, the part that's illuminated. What if I told you there was a creek with fish over in the dark area? Well, you can't see it. There's no light over there. So you can say, wow, I can't see it, and wander off into the dark and fall into the creek. Or you can say, maybe Ben's trying to keep me out of the creek, and you have some trust. Those are the options. Science is great. If I want to know about that sidewalk, I could know lots about that sidewalk because there's a big, giant light on it. But if I want to know about the creek in the dark, science does nothing for me. Science is really bad about studying the past. How do you prove scientifically that there ever was a man named George Washington? There's no test you can run because it's an unreproducible event. A man lived and died and is gone, and I can't make 3 milliliters of George Washington in a test tube. That doesn't work. Okay? So what the Bible tells us then is that there is actually a whole lot of the world that's in the dark to us, that's not under our street lamp. In fact, the biggest part of the world is the unseen world. It's a world I can't know by science. You either trust that it's there or you don't. You either believe someone's giving you information based on things they saw. So you read, we're going to have a sermon today from the book of Revelation, believe it or not. I'm not going to get very far, like 8 verses. But the point is, John says, I was caught up in the Spirit on the Lord's day, and here's what I saw. You either believe he saw stuff or you don't. Is John a believable witness? That's what you're asked to do as a juror. And you have to think about that. Can't know it by science, but I know about it by faith, trust in what God tells me. There are people who have seen things and tell us these are the things that I saw. And God, who does things in the seeing world, says you need to believe me about the other stuff because of what I'm showing you under the streetlight. The Bible tells us there are other kinds of people. Not like human people, but beings. I find people to be an easier word than beings with kids. Beings, kind of weird. So if they're older and you want to go with beings, go with it. But they're different kinds of people. They're the unseen people. Is that creepy? Deal with it. That's the world you live in. If you're afraid to let your kid believe in things they can't see, they're going to have a really hard time with religion, right? So you're going to have to get to the point. But yeah. You don't have to walk around like in fear that there's demons behind this door waiting to get me. But you are going to have to at least buy into the idea that there is a part of the world that you don't see. That includes, Bible talks about angels. Now, do some religious folks get really carried away? And like angels are involved in everything you do? And, you know, I don't see any reason to believe that. I try not to make fun of it like I just did. But I do at least have to acknowledge that those types of beings exist. The Bible says so. And apparently I don't know much about it. So what do I know? Same thing with demons. Do demons exist? Bible says so. Jesus talks to demons. So you don't get to make fun of the idea that there are beings who are evil in the world. He chats with them and throws them into pigs and things. So you just kind of have to say, that's the world we live in. Our modern world has tried really hard to just say that world doesn't exist. And even Christians have really bought into it and said, well, you know, I believe in Jesus, but not that kind of weird, creepy, invisible stuff. But part of believing in God is believing there's a bigger world out there that you don't see. And that you're even part of it. That there's part of you you don't see. There's more to you than this. How do I explain to kids about the resurrection and all the things we talked about last week if there's nothing more than what they see in front of them? What happens when I die? Turn into dirt. That's the part I see. So fundamental to Christian faith is the idea there's stuff going on that I don't see, and that's okay. There's more to the world than what's under my streetlight. Yep, there are angels. There are beings who love and serve God, and there are demons. That's what we call those beings who do not love and serve God. Okay. Does that make some sense? And then the granddaddy of them all, what do we say about Satan? I throw this one in at the end because I do feel like kids sometimes get a funny idea about Satan, either like dreadful fear or nothing at all. And somewhere in between is the right answer. There is one being, the Bible tells us, in the unseen world who is our enemy because he wants to harm us. I don't like telling kids that. I mean, I don't like to tell kids there is someone out there who wants to do you harm. There is real evil in the world. I don't want them to be perpetually terrified of everything out there. Boogeyman behind every corner and under every bed. I got enough trouble with the boogeyman. I don't need like to tell them about the Bible boogeyman. But I also kind of do. They need to know somehow there is evil and it's real in the world. And some people are deeply motivated by that. That's kind of part of that awkward stranger danger conversation you have. What are you telling them? There are people in the world that aren't nice. They exist. Well, there are also people in the unseen world that aren't nice. They exist.
I know the Lucas has come up quite a bit with the shooting at Beggs. And then there was another shooting very, another state over or whatever, and he's asked several times about why is that happening. And so that's come up, question.
Like the immediate scientific under the streetlight answer is, well, people do bad things. But what the Bible says is it's actually bigger than that. That there is this greater, grander conflict, and most of it you don't even see. But there is evil out there too. And it spills over into our world. I mean, that when we say something, when we see a shooting and we say, that's hell on earth, we're closer to right than we know. Because it is the evil of the world unseen spilling over into this one. And that's a different way of viewing the world. That's not like a cold, calculated, analytic, scientific view of the world, but that is a biblical view of the world, that there really is evil out there. I think I told the story in a sermon a while back, but I'll tell it again. I was sitting at a birthday party that I didn't want to be at with my father-in-law and my grandfather-in-law, both old Church Christ dudes, you know, been there another time, and they're talking about churches down in the Tecumseh area, about, well, this happened to this church over here, and they had a hard time, and this church over here shrunk and shriveled up and died, and this church split, and they're telling these terrible stories about things that happened in churches. And my father-in-law, Craig, says, well, you know why that happened, don't you? And I'm like, ready. Oh, this is my moment to like impress them with my knowledge of ministry. And this is how it works. Well, you see, there's pride in the human heart. And we have bad leadership systems. And we have, Bob says, the devil. And it occurred to me that was like a much better answer. I mean, in his mind, it was fairly simple. There's evil in the world. And it's real, and it makes bad things happen. And yeah, we're complicit in it, and you can do all the psychology stuff about bad choices we make. But also, there's really evil in the world. A fascinating thing that happens in movies right now, if you go watch movies, is that we're afraid to depict actual evil. In the movies that you see, even the best of them right now, there's this huge push in cinema to portray the bad guys as believable and sympathetic. And relatable. They're bad, but only because they had a bad childhood. They're bad, but only because of things that happened to them. Really, they're victims themselves. Right. And I appreciate the understanding they're trying to breed in us. That's great. We should understand each other better. But also, bad is bad. Okay? I'll give you two cinematic examples. Marvel, am I going to spoil it for anybody? That if the Thanos is the Greek word for death, okay? He's the villain in the latest Avengers movie. If ever you could make a bad guy, how about a character named Death? Right? This should be the ultimate bad guy. And yet you watch the movie, Thanos wants to destroy half the universe to save it. He's really kind of a nice guy. I mean, he's wanting to do you a favor. Yeah, half the universe has to die, but he's got good intentions. He's got a good relationship with his daughters. No, not really. But yeah, so there's that going on. I just went and watched with the kids the Grinch movie. And I come home and like give Celine my why is it done this way rant. It's a fun movie and I like it, okay? The Cumberbatch Grinch, okay? It's good. But the distinction between like that Grinch movie versus old school Grinch movie is that the Grinch is now relatable. He was in an orphanage and had a bad Christmas, and because of his bad childhood experiences, he now hates Christmas. Instead of just stink, stink, stunk, there's like a whole psychological explanation of it. So I'm not saying that's necessarily bad. I'm just saying our world is deeply motivated to explain, well, nobody's really evil. You just have a bad childhood. And the Bible says, actually, out there in the world, there's just evil. There is real evil, and it's terrible, and we are fighting it. We are trying to defeat it, not counsel it. And it's a different picture of the universe. Dunkirk, the Nazis. This was the first time anyone had done a cinema with Nazis. You were like, well, they're not that bad. I mean, Hitler, he's bad. But the Nazis, I mean, they're Germans. They're just doing what Germans do. Yeah, it was really like... I'm supposed to be sympathetic to Nazis. What's going on? They're all very human characters. Okay.
I think it's kind of, you said it earlier with quoting Einstein, but it's kind of this, you know, ethics and science can't prove ethics, but we're in this kind of period of time where science is trying to prove or explain things like good and evil.
Yeah.
And so if, and I mean, not saying that science isn't accurate, but they're going to try to go about and they find different things with neurological things, and then they try to say, well, it's not actually an innate evilness, you know,
some sort of
chemical thing.
It's a descriptive view of the world. Why do people do bad things? Well, I've got psychological science and neuroscience, and I can say there are these chemicals and everything. And there's an explanation for it that's descriptive, but the ethics kind of disappears, that you no longer get to say, that's just an evil thing that person did.
But rather than say it that way, can't we just say that this is just proving that all people have the potential to have evil in their heart?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way the Bible would look at that and say, yeah, that's what we've been telling you all along, that it's a fallen world. Once sin gets in the world, the world's a mess. And sure, grand that science has figured out what to label that, but there is a better way of describing it, is the point I'm trying to make. Yeah. No!
Yes, yeah. Star Wars, okay? So, I don't know a lot about Star Wars on the screen.
Let's just stop there. There is evil in the world.
Yes, okay.
Go ahead.
So, Darth Vader's the bad guy, as far as I know. Well, now, like, and Brody is so into Star Wars. So, he's coming in, you know, what's Darth Vader's real name?
Anakin.
Yeah. Dude, now Anakin's a good guy because he lost his wife, and that's why he's, you know, mad, and he does all these things. And now they tell him about when he's younger.
Yeah.
And man, he's the hero. Anakin's a good guy. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Later he turns into the bad guy, but it's only because of all this.
Like in the original Star Wars universe, you have Vader, he's a bad guy. And then, okay, we expand that a little bit. Vader's actually a damaged good guy. But there's the Emperor, and he's really, 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 really irredeemably bad. But then, like, the further you go out, we just kind of get these broken, sympathetic characters. Kylo Ren, what a sad story. You know, it's kind of, we just keep making them more sad and sympathetic. And that's really what it's about. We prefer characters that are just not the incarnation of evil. Because that just bugs us from a scientific level.
Even Satan, some people believe he was an angel that went bad. So he started out good and went bad.
So Milton writes the great book, Paradise Lost, and tells the story of the fall of Satan from heaven into Eden and down and further and so forth. This comes out, and the American revolutionaries in the 1700s are reading Milton. And there's a lot of interesting research being done of how they came to idolize Satan. Some of them did. in that story, not like Satan, but in the story. Because who is Satan? Well, he's really identifiable, right? He's fighting against the evil empire, like we're fighting against the British. He just wanted to be independent, like we want to be. And they're like, yeah, hey, I kind of get that. And some of them, like Thomas Jefferson and others, are like, yeah, that's not a bad character, right? There is this strong pull in us to try to sympathize with evil rather than just say, okay, I appreciate that there's a story there and it's sympathetic, but it's still bad to rebel against God. And so only Christianity, in that sense, only religion can speak to absolutes. When it comes to, it's evil to murder children. It's evil to commit rape. There might be an explanation for it that's psychological and say, people who have this kind of childhood or this kind of chemical in their body are more likely to whatever. But in the end, it's still evil. And we can just identify it and say, that's what it is. Science doesn't do that for us. Okay, last thing we want to talk to our kids about Satan. This is the key, because kids do get confused about Satan. God is more powerful than Satan and every other being in the universe. So it's not a battle between two equals. We don't have a good God and a bad God who are fighting. We have God and a being in rebellion against God who will lose. That's the story of the Bible. God promised that he would defeat Satan's plan to hurt people. But God ultimately wins. We're told the ending. And our view is the story of Jesus is that unseen battle in the world we can see. And John said, I saw him. And I saw him die, and I thought Satan had won. And then on Sunday morning, I saw him live, and I knew God had won. And then you're being asked to believe that testimony, that God is winning. I want to say a whole lot more. I'm way out of time. So thanks for your attention. We'll put this online with the other lessons, and then next week somebody else can talk to you.